Transmitting sound. Download complete. Now launching audio stream. The Kelly Alexander Show.
We are thrilled to chat with car care expert Pam Oakes this week, talking about preparing your vehicle for the winter. Everything from installing the proper tires to what windshield wipers to use. We're also chatting with social media expert Patrick Charles about the value of YouTube in the music industry and if selling records really matters anymore. Up next is up-and-coming Canadian artist Corey Niles talking about his work with the band Neverest and his new single Roller Coaster. We then wrap things up with a remix from Galley, I'm Alive.
Capture your need for sound.
Getting your car ready for the winter isn't always the easiest thing to do, but what about protecting it against the elements? Is it worth rust-proofing your car? And what are some of the benefits of doing so? Pam Oakes, our car care expert, joins us to talk about rust-proofing your car and what to do to get your car ready for winter. Pam, welcome back to the Kelly Alexander Show.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here.
So can we talk about rust-proofing your car? Is it really worth investing in it? Because I know some people are on the fence.
And they should be because, you know, it isn't like it was 25, 35, 45 years ago. For an example, thank goodness my great-grandfather rust-proofed his vehicle, his 69 Plymouth, because it wouldn't be around for me to drive today.
Okay.
It was a perfect investment for him. But back then, when they made vehicles, they used that old Detroit steel, and I mean, everything was metal. But on today's vehicles, it's more of plastics, polymers, et cetera, and you're not having so much of, how would you say, rust, the metal that rusts out. And that's why a lot of the manufacturers, they will have a little warranty there for the paint and rust and everything like that, a corrosion little policy in with their car warranty that is extended that we never saw before because the sealants and the paints and the different coatings, they're actually protecting the vehicle more so than like our great-grandfather's day. Very important, though, that people forget the undercarriage of the car. This is prone to rust, even though we have plastic gas tanks now and everything else. There are components that can rust on the top. For an example, on a gas tank, there is a metal little ring that holds the fuel pump in place. Those rust out horribly because cars kick up road salt and road chemical to keep the ice off the roads, and it's very corrosive. You know, there are maybe some areas where you spot rust proofing would be very beneficial, especially in areas that are prone to a lot of snow and have their roads covered with the salt and so on and so forth. As for in the general populace, I would recommend, instead of going to the expense, that you go and you get your car washed, believe it or not, during the winter months like you do during the summer. You want to get that road salt off the paint. You want to get it from the undercarriage because, you know, then, by the way, that also eats into the exhaust, which we don't want any exhaust leaks, and that's something you don't rust-proof, really. And you want to keep the car looking in the best shape that it can because, remember, that is an investment you're driving, and that's going to be your trade-in for your newer or new car in the future.
Is there a time of the year, Pam, that is best to get your car in for a rust-proofing treatment?
Well, you know, like anything else, just before season, you're going to be paying top dollar along through with the season. Towards the end of the season, the snow season, then you might find some deals for companies that have leftover product that might do it at a discounted rate. That would actually be the best time to consider rust-proofing your vehicle if you'd like to do that avenue.
And how often should it be done? Is it every year, every 2 years? How do you go about that?
Depending upon the chemical that is used, the company that you're using, and the warranty, there's going to be an upkeep in some circumstances, and you want to go off of what they tell you. Some of them, like really nasty stuff they used back in the 60s, I mean, that's there for life.
Okay.
Not going anywhere. And now we're so more environmentally conscious that we're not going to put those extremely toxic things into our environment. So it's going to be a pretty watered down version of what they used to use. But there again, depending upon your make and model and what is actually employed in the body of your car, the undercarriage of your car is going to determine how they're going to apply the rust proofing material and how often. So you're going to have to ask a lot of questions before you sign on that dotted line. And the biggest question you're going to ask is, how much is this going to cost out the door, the total out the door and the warranty?
Okay. And something that popped into my head, does it make a difference if you're driving like a sedan or an SUV? Like, is there a difference between makes and models about doing it or not doing it or how often you do it?
No, there again, you know, we're going to go off of the make and model and the materials used in that specific car or truck. And again, your environment that you're driving in, are you going to be on salty roads a lot? Or is it going to just be an occasion that you go up north to visit relatives and you get in the snow? If that's the case, please, you know, keep the money in your wallet and have the vehicle washed several times while you're up there. Meanwhile, you know, depending upon how you use the car, a car that is being used during the weekend, for an example, you go up snowmobiling or you're going to go up skiing and that's about the only time you take the SUV out to drag the skidoos or whatever, then you might not rust proof because you're not using it as often. Now, if it's your daily driver and you're in those adverse conditions, you may consider rust proofing because you want to keep the vehicle looking great for that resale.
Okay. Joining us on the Kelly Alexander Show, our car care expert, Pam Oakes. You can learn more about her on her website, pamsmotorcity.net. Pam, I wanted to ask you about getting ready for winter, and I know that that means different things to different people depending on where they live in North America, you know. But I guess what always would stand out, no matter where you live, is things you may or may not forget to handle. So what things would you say would be really important getting your car winter ready regardless?
Before hitting the road, before the real old man winter sits in, you want your vehicle checked over bumper to bumper for safety by an ASC Blue Seal shop or dealership, by an ASC certified technician. And you want to know the health of your vehicle. You want to know if the tires are looking great, how the brakes look, how about the hoses, especially that antifreeze condition. You want to know about the wiper blade condition, et cetera, et cetera. You know where I'm going with this.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to ask that technician a lot of questions. For an example, I'm going on a trip skiing. Will it handle the higher altitudes that we normally don't live in? You know, we live, for example, in the Ohio Valley.
Mm-hmm.
We're going over to the Rockies. We'll be able to handle this. You know, things like this. You want to have this rapport with this technician. Another important thing, remember, when it gets a little colder, you're going to hear little creaks and groans that maybe you didn't hear last year because the car is a year older. Now, just don't take this as a matter of fact, oh, it's just getting older. Go ask. Take 5 minutes. Say, could you just listen to this noise? Is it something to be concerned about? Because when you catch it small, then the cost stays small. When you let it go, it dominoes into something really big and you're paying the price. It's not worth it. So take 5 minutes out of your schedule and ask. It's not going to hurt anything and it could prevent you a very big bill. That's the best word of advice that I'd give anybody in any climate condition for this winter that they could take, is just be a good scout, be prepared, and find out your overall car health.
What about winter tires? How do you know what you sort of need? And also, are all winter tires made the same?
No, they're not all made the same. And vehicle tires, you know, you could have them for SUVs, crossovers, for sedans, for smaller compacts. And depending upon where you're at in North America is going to determine if you're actually going to do the snow tire thing or if you're going to have the occasional chains on the tires, because some people will choose that over purchasing snow tires for the winter. It all depends upon your driving habits. And again, when you're doing the safety inspection, this should be one of the questions, actually, you should be having with your ASC certified technician when they're going over that safety list about winter driving.
Okay. And something else that I wanted to discuss with you is the fact that you mentioned briefly about the windshield wipers, I should say. Pam, how important are they really? Because I think a lot of people just are like, oh, they're there. You know, like we take them for granted, I feel.
Yes, we do. And you know, the other thing too is that we take them for granted to the point that we expect them to do everything for us for the windscreen. You know, we expect it to keep it clean so we can see, which is the ultimate goal. But, you know, during the winter time, when you get that snow and that ice, you know how the ice will stick, of course. Mm-hmm. And you have the ice scraper. Some people will use a credit card. And others will sit there and they'll try to heat the windshield up, and then they'll use their wipers to remove the ice.
Oh.
Well, each pass puts little tears into that rubber blade.
Okay.
Don't do it. Get out there, scrape it, save your money. But remember, if it gets a little tough to see, please, by all means, don't be a cheapskate. Go get some more wiper blades. Majority of the auto parts stores will actually install them for you.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go for the special ones. Just go for the brand name, and you'll be fine. Remember, you want to keep them clean. You can keep them clean by paper towels, plain old paper towels. I always use Fantastic with Lemon, a lemon-based cleaner,
mm-hmm.
and I wipe them maybe once every other week. And you would not believe the road dirt and grime that will come off them, especially in the winter, you know, throwing that slush up.
Mm-hmm.
It really does help. But clean the windshield before using the wiper blades. That's a real good rule of thumb to keep the blades on there longer.
Can we talk about what people should have in their car in the winter? Because I think a lot of people head out in the road and, you know, hope for the best. And you always think you're going to get from point A to point B. But like, for example, one thing I always bug my brother about is, because he's such a big guy, he's like, oh, I don't need a jacket. I'm like, well, what if you break down? But what things should you have in your car, you know, to help yourself if something goes wrong?
Oh, definitely. Blanket is right there at the top of the list. You know, these are items that I'm just going to mention briefly that you don't have to go out and buy a kit. These are things you can get in the basement or in the garage, and you can get a box or an old duffel bag, and definitely tell your brother he needs a blanket.
Mm-hmm.
He definitely needs some paper towels. I always say a little first aid kit or some bandages, some Neosporin, you know, things like that. Like I said, you don't have to go out and buy anything fancy. Clear painter's tarp in case there's a little fender bender and you don't want to get the outside elements in the car. You can take that clear painter's tarp and,
mm-hmm.
of course, a roll of duct tape. Who doesn't love the 1,001 uses of duct tape?
Yeah.
And duct tape it so you can keep those elements out. Another thing, a self-inflating tire puncture, the additive,
mm-hmm.
that will get you out of a jam from point A to point B. Bungee cords, again, it's like duct tape. Who doesn't love a bungee cord? There's a million and one uses for them. Sealed snacks. You know, sometimes we get in those traffic jams because of the snow, and you may be sitting there for an hour or two,
mm-hmm.
and you're expecting to go home to dinner, and you're not going to go home for dinner right away. Well, especially those who are diabetic, a sealed snack, you know, the little cracker
yep.
sandwiches or, you know, whatever you like. That's always something to get you out of a jam.
Is it important to have flares?
Well, yeah, we were actually getting the flares here. And flares are important because not only do we want to be seen for the emergency personnel, we also want to be seen by the oncoming traffic.
Okay.
Flares, those stinky, smoky, just horribly messy little sticks, have been replaced by LED flares, reusable LED flares. Now, this is something that you would have to purchase, but it's under $20. You can get them at the auto parts stores. And like I said, they're LED. You can put them anywhere you want. They stick on the car. They're battery operated. When you're done they just go back in the box.
That's awesome. I wanted to ask you as well, before we wrap things up, when it comes to, I know a lot of cars are obviously very capable of doing a lot of things in the winter. Should people still be concerned about doing the best thing they can to help a car start in the winter? If it is like where I'm talking to you from right now in Montreal, we can go as low as, you know, minus 30 or something with wind chill and beyond if it's really bad. But what, you know, is there anything that we should have or do or be aware of how to handle if it is bitterly cold on these January mornings?
Well, I traded blizzards for hurricanes, so I can understand that. I remember those, and no, I was thinking actually when you're telling me that, how to avoid just going out, period.
Yeah, that's
what
a good idea.
Excuse to call in for work, my car won't start, you know. Keep toasty warm inside. But yeah, you know, there are instances where you have to go out and you do have to go to work. And unfortunately, with today's cars, it's even easier that excuse is becoming a thing of the past, because there are things that you can do. A lot of them will have engine warmers.
Okay.
Of course, everybody's familiar with that. And you just need to be careful, you know, where you have this plugged into and how it's set up. They have aftermarket ones available, and of course, you need to follow the directions to the letter,
mm-hmm.
and don't guess. You know, it's always good to follow 1 through 8. You don't want to sit there and stop at number 4 and say, okay, I got it. Don't, because there might be something very important on number 8 that we need to read. You also, of course, you've done that, like I told everybody, that pre-winter inspection. And so we're going to know that the antifreeze is going to be able to sustain those bitter cold temperatures. So we're not going to really be worrying about that so much. But it's just keeping that engine compartment, you know, toasty warm. So when we start it up there, that the engine oil is going to flow. Another thing that I make recommend, especially in the winter, nice icy area where you're at, using a synthetic oil.
Okay.
During the winter will increase your chances for a quicker start and decrease your chances for engine wear damage upon an excessively cold start. Synthetic oil. That's about one of the rare times that I do recommend it, but that is a good example.
I also had this in mind, and I wanted you to either dispel my theory or tell me that I'm on the right path. When I shut down my car, whether it's in the summer or the winter or spring or fall, I always shut off everything. Like, I shut off the air, I shut off the radio, like, everything is off. And I know that, you know, in the winter, people leave their heat on so they can car start it up, and then it's already, you know, blowing for them when they get in there. But my thing is, I always feel like I want to shut everything off I possibly can before I shut the car off, so that when it starts, it has an easier time of it. Am I correct, or am I just being really ridiculous?
Well, old times, they used to do that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now with all the electronics on the vehicles, you don't have to do that.
Okay, good to know.
That's more old school.
Okay, because I always just feel like I'm asking my car a lot. If it's, you know, the radio's blaring and the AC's on or the heat's on. So, and I always sort of reprimand my mother for doing the same thing. Like, I'm like, you know, shut everything off, like the wipers off, you know, everything. So, good to know. So it's not really necessary.
Not like it used to be, no.
Okay, perfect. Is there any final advice that you'd like us to think about, Pam, for the winter before I let you go?
Yes, just be prepared.
Okay.
You know, be prepared for everything. Don't second guess, like your brother said, I'm a big guy, I can handle the cold. You know, don't.
Mm-hmm.
Just be prepared. Always think when you go out, you're going to experience the worst, and you won't, because you're going to have all your ducks in a row, and you're going to come out just fine.
Thank
Enjoy
you.
Enjoy it.
Thank you. That's awesome. Pam, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Kelly.
That is our car care expert, Pam Oakes. Make sure to check out all of her goodness on her website, pamsmotorcity.net.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Gone are the days when a million-selling album were all you needed to prove your rock star status. We're now seeing acts blow up without the sales figures that you would expect. There's a whole new way to measure success, and you really don't have to be a major player in the industry to participate. Joining us to talk about this, our social media expert, Patrick Charles. Patrick, thanks for being on the show again this week.
Anytime. How you doing?
Good. I'm good. So I think this is sort of really interesting, this thought process, because it's true. Like, back in the day, it was all about, you know, how many millions of albums or units you were going to sell. So what do you think is actually more important than sales right now, if we're not sort of caring as much, if you will?
Well, it's crazy because it's turned into basically sales versus YouTube. So you want to just get in front of people. Like, you just want to be, more than anything, you want to be talked about.
Right.
Which is, it's hard to believe, but that's what it's come down to, basically. I mean, because there's tons of people out there that have, you know, sort of minimal sales, but incredible amounts of YouTube views. And that's making them, you know, that's making them, the hot topic when everybody talks about music.
Right. And I guess in a way, when you have all these hits or views or whatever, that's when people start to approach you because they think, oh, you are out front and center, so we'll sell ads or we'll do this or we'll get you to pimp out our watch line or whatever.
Exactly. I'm waiting to hear, I'm dying to hear just how much that group Ilvis, are going to make off of their song, The Fox.
Right. Right. That's true. And yeah, because they've been everywhere. Ellen had them on, like, it's crazy. And, you know, are the music acts, are they even concerned about still selling, you know, quote unquote, you know, million units or 2 million units or?
Well, it's funny because we talked about this before, but it's like, it seems like people that have been in it for a while are still kind of stressed about it. But, you know, like, sort of newer acts don't care. Like, for instance, Jay-Z, we talked about earlier in the year when he did his whole big campaign for his Magna Carta album, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, the album has sold, I actually think it's sold less than a million still.
Really?
I mean, if you count, yeah, like real sales, like never mind this whole, the Samsung deal and like, you know, they'll buy a million copies and people can download it for free. All of these sort of shenanigans that people do. Mm-hmm. I think what has actually been selling on the charts, I think it's like hovering around 800 or 900,000.
Wow. I would expect he would have been over 2 million by now.
Yeah. But you see, but that's the old days. That's what right. It would have been. You would have thought that it would have gone over a million by now. I'll tell you another one that I don't even think is near a million yet, or it's actually near, but hasn't done it yet, is Robin Thicke.
Really?
Yeah. Because people care about the song. They care about Blurred Lines, but they don't so much care about an album.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
So really interesting. You know, I mean, that's one of the biggest songs of the years. And the single has sold like 5 million copies.
Right.
But as far as the album goes, though, I don't think the album's anywhere near there.
Which is kind of sad because I have a copy of the album and the album's really good. Like, I would say I really enjoy probably about 6 or 7 songs on there.
Right.
And feel like he put sort of, you know, because I often find it's hard to find an artist right now unless you're really into them, where you can say from A to Z, oh my God, I love the journey they've taken me on this album. So,
yes.
But he, I feel like he did a pretty stand-up job, but that's interesting to think. But you're right, especially now, because like in the past, you know, you couldn't just single out a single. Like you had to either get the single if you, you know, went that route, or you really had to, like, I can't tell you how many albums back in the day I bought just because I liked 2 or 3 songs off of it.
Of course, we've all done it.
Yeah. So that's, wow, that's interesting. What is that sort of the Robin Thicke, is that sort of the biggest quote unquote disappointment album wise lately, or is there more?
Well, actually, it's funny because like all of the albums are disappointments if you think about it.
Right.
I mean, Justin Timberlake had a big year. You know, Daft Punk, of course. We always talk about those ones as the big examples. But I mean, you look at the Miley Cyrus record, right? Mm-hmm. Bangers.
Yeah.
It's not really doing crazy business. It sold about 270,000 copies.
Wow.
Which, you know, with that sort of publicity 10 years ago at the sort of peak of sales, I'll say more than 10 years ago, around 2000 was the peak of sales. Everybody was releasing an album, if you remember that period, and everybody was selling a million in a week.
Right. Yeah.
It's like Eminem had an album, boom, million in a week. NSYNC had No Strings Attached, a million in a week. Now that doesn't happen anymore.
No. Do you think if, when Eminem drops his album, like, will that go over the million?
I don't know. I mean, it's really hard to say because, first of all, you don't know what kind of deals they're going to put in place. You know, maybe they're going to do a thing where, you know, buy one album, get one album free. Who knows? Maybe they'll do something to sort of fudge the numbers. But I just don't know that people are that interested in owning something, especially when they can get like the advanced singles and when they can stream it on YouTube. And it's really interesting to see. I'm sure he's going to have one of the bigger ones of the year, but I'm gonna say he's going to top out around 600,000.
Mm-hmm. And do you think this new sort of way things are going, that newer artists are really going to have a shorter shelf life than like, you know, let's say artists that were, you know, from the 90s or early 2000s?
I definitely think so. And everybody's going to have a shorter shelf life at this point because it's weird, you know, like we talked about the Blurred Lines single. And I think that the whole sort of spectacle around just that song mm-hmm. is what makes the song. And it's like people are bored now. It's like if I tell you about a song, most of the times you'll go to YouTube and look at the video for it, mm-hmm. or even if it's just a lyric video, but you'll go to YouTube and you'll check it out. But if I tell you about another song that you can't see on YouTube and you have to actually just sit and listen to, mm-hmm. it's like a different story. I mean, like, look at all the hoopla around Miley Cyrus, right? I mean, Wrecking Ball has over 250 million views on YouTube, wow. somewhere around there. But of those 250 million views, she only managed to sell about 270,000 albums. Right. So, you know, if somebody says, oh, there's a new Miley Cyrus video and it's crazy, you go and look at it and you're like, wow, that was incredible. But as far as like going out and buying an album, people aren't so motivated to do that anymore.
Yeah. And I really feel like that will be part of the reason why artists have quicker shelf lives, because if you don't feel like if you don't buy into that artist and sort of travel their career with them, like you right. won't like. Yeah, like, I mean, we always go back to my affinity for Janet, but, like, I've been in it for the long haul. And,
yeah, yeah.
And just like someone who would, you know, be like a Madonna fan, like, they've been in it for the long haul. So, yeah, she might release an album that's not that great, but, like, you still, like, you've invested so much time. And I think some of the younger consumers, they don't even understand what that's like to be in it to win it with that artist.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Part of the thing is, I mean, you know, from radio, you meet people who come in, you know, younger listeners who want to meet someone who's in, you know, to do autographs or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll always tell you that they're an enormous fan of this person, and the person will literally have one song released.
Yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And yeah. you think to yourself, wow, you got a lot of love for this person after hearing like 3.5 minutes of what they think, you know?
Right. Like it's my only, incredible. Yeah. And like, I almost feel like it's only going to be boy bands that might last a little bit longer. Just in the fact that girls will swoon for them. But I almost Absolutely. Feel like on an artistic level, you know, like a Miley Cyrus, she might not last that long because people aren't invested. Like, she's shock value right now.
Exactly. How much can you keep it up?
Right, exactly. And I'm, you know, I'm bored of her already. So now before I let you bounce, though, I have to ask you this. It was the big announcement of, you know, Kanye West proposing to Miss Kim Kardashian renting out that ball field in San Francisco. Are you sick of him? Like, I'm tired of him.
Yeah, completely. I think a lot of people are. And I think that's, you know, speaking of disappointments, that's another album that debuted at number one, but hasn't really exploded like everybody thought it would. I mean, mm-hmm. he did those sort of events all over the States, you know, broadcasting the videos on the sides of buildings and all that kind of thing. And yeah. that went on for a couple of weeks and a lot of shows, but it's not really saving the album though.
Right. And like I think he's so far up his own tail feathers that he really doesn't even realize that like not many of us think he's a creative genius.
Yeah, I don't know of anybody who does.
Yeah, except him.
He's the only guy I know of who thinks he's a creative genius.
And do you think he shot himself slightly in the foot with that? Because I almost feel like people give Kanye a free pass because we all know he's nutty. But like, I'm like, it was a whole new level of nutty when he said that, because I'm just like, dude, like, get over yourself. And the problem that bothers me too with him is like, you'd expect this behavior from like a 21-year-old. He's 36.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? Like, he needs to wind it down a little and like have some humble pie. Like, it's funny because I don't know if you remember, but one of the first times that I got to know about him was when he was sort of just producing. He hadn't really started rapping yet. And that was like, to me, it was around 2004. I don't know if you knew about
right,
him
right.
before then.
Yeah, no, it was around the same time for me. Yeah.
Yeah. And like because he actually produced 2 or 3 songs for Janet on her Demita Joe
album.
Oh,
I didn't
even
know that.
And it was funny because like, it's just, it's incredible to see how, like, he did have, you know, he does have talent, but, like, on what planet does he think it's okay to go around telling everyone that, you know, he's a creative genius and he'd be lying to all of us if he didn't tell us?
Yeah, it's a very strange way of trying to get your message out there. What he should be doing is he should go back to his sort of no interview policy.
Right.
And just let the music speak for itself. Because I think when the album leaked or when it was released, I mean, you can't even tell the difference anymore these days.
Yeah.
But when we first started to hear tracks from this Yeezus record, yeah. everybody was discussing it and everybody was very serious.
Right.
Oh, you see what he's doing on this track? You see what he's doing on that track? This track's very interesting for this reason. And then, you know, he goes on Kimmel and he went on like Kris Jenner's show or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was that it? Yeah. Okay. So when you sit there and you talk about how great your record is, I think it just sort of turns people off because, I mean, Miley Cyrus had a bit of that backlash as well. I mean, first of all, over the Wrecking Ball video, saying that it was like a modern version of Nothing Compares to You from Sinead O'Connor.
Oh.
First of all, people were sort of offended by that because, yeah. I mean, that video was definitely the polar opposite of uh-huh. the Wrecking Ball video. I mean, they've got nothing in common except for one tight shot of someone's face crying and singing.
Oh.
That's pretty much all they have in common. And I think that she didn't do herself any favors by saying that, because that, you know, comparing yourself to somebody and saying, look, I'm as good as this person doesn't really help your career.
No.
So I think that really hurt her. I think also talking about how, you know, she was kind of saying that this album is going to be, you know, this generation's Thriller or something like that.
Oh,
so those those quotes never help you.
No. And like all of these little junior mints, they don't even have a clue, the most of them, about how the struggle, you know what I mean? Because like she, you know, she's only where she is right now because of her dad. Not that he sort of took the helm recently, but if, you know, it hadn't been him, if it hadn't been him to get her into Hannah Montana, like then obviously the train sort of kept rolling on its own without him. But if it wasn't for that, and like, she's never had to travel around the country in like a seedy bar scene.
No.
You know, like, none of them understand. And that's what drives me nuts, because like, I'm not like necessarily a big rock fan or whatever, but these bands, or even like someone like Serena Ryder, who is just traveling and doing these gigs and these dates, like, and I'm a huge pop fan, but like, I wish some of them knew what it was like to not just be manufactured, you know, like they really need to go and hustle.
Yeah, that's part of the thing. And I mean, again, you know, talking about having a sort of a short shelf life. I mean, the thing for Miley Cyrus is that this is very much a performance, because with all of the discussion around her, what a lot of people forget is that she's a millionaire.
Right.
So she's kind of doing this as a lark, in my opinion, you know? I mean, she came off of Hannah Montana, sort of laid low for a little while, then did a couple of weird things to get back in the press, and now she's got this album out. She's reinvented herself. But, I mean, it's easy to do it when it doesn't really matter that much if it fails, and you're just going to do something that's going to be as shocking as possible and as crazy as possible, because it doesn't really matter. I mean, you know, she can retire on her Hannah Montana money, so who cares?
Yeah, exactly. And quickly before I let you go, Katy Perry's album Prism is out now. Lady Gaga's is coming on the 11th. Who's going to do better?
Katy Perry.
Yeah.
Absolutely Katy Perry. I mean, she has got... she's selling out arenas because she has got the most ridiculous number of YouTube views for her songs. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, she's just such a, like, that's the thing, you know? It's not just about, I can't name one song from her, okay? Like, I don't like Katy Perry, I can't name one song. But I do know that she's very famous to the point that people do need to see everything she does is sort of record-breaking on Vivo. Whenever they release a new song, they're always record-breaking. It's amazing. And, you know, like I said, for that reason, she's selling out arenas. And I think that she has, like, almost higher awareness than Lady Gaga right now.
Yeah, well, I think her song Roar has done better than Applause.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll see, like, because, and she has said that on this album, she's going to, quote unquote, I think, tone it down with regards to, like, not wearing blue hair or candy-coated, you know, whatever, that it's a more serious album. So we'll see if that translates for, because I don't know if people like, you know, I think it is time for her to not necessarily tone it down, but maybe switch it up, which she has done. Because I think had she done another Teenage Dream album where she was like looking like cotton candy, it might have not worked out. So we'll see. But she has, I think she has that X factor too, or like everyone, like I think I actually like her. I don't think she's necessarily a great singer, but I think what she puts out is, you know, it's always danceable or feel goodable, if you will.
So, yeah, no, absolutely. That's,
so
I mean, that is what she does.
Like, and I think she has a good, like, she's not ridiculous, you know, like she's good to her fans.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, like she's not Miley, you know what I mean? And she's not ridiculous. So that's cool. Okay. So thank you, Patrick. I really appreciate it.
Anytime.
Excellent. That is our social media expert, Patrick Charles. You can learn more about him on our website, KellyAlexanderShow.com, and also follow him on Twitter @GetPatrick.
KellyAlexanderShow.com.
Joining us on the show is songwriter and recording artist Corey Niles, who apart from his own music has been involved in writing songs for Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown, not to mention the amazing track from Neverest called Rewind. Corey, welcome to the Kelly Alexander Show.
What's going on, Kelly? Thanks for having me.
Very happy to have you on the show. And, you know, I want people to get a sense of who you are, because we have a lot of people listening, not only in Canada, but also in the States. And I've got a bunch of listeners listening in Asia right now. So how did you decide to pursue a career in music, and how would you describe your sound?
Ah, man, how did my music career start? I mean, it's funny, I was a basketball player.
Oh, wow.
So everybody's always asking me how I did the, you know, the whole basketball music turnaround, but honestly, it was just one of those things where I stopped playing and my life did a full 360 in one day, and I just realized that, you know, music was my passion. I was always doing music as a child, but never took it seriously. I always did it with my brother, recording songs on a little PC with the little bootleg microphone. So it was fun, but it got to a point where, you know, I realized I made the right connections at the right time. I just realized that I could actually probably do this, you know, and a lot of who I am and I'm really thankful for is the fact that I do get to work with a lot of different artists, different genres, different sounds. And it marriages well with who I am as an artist, because I would say there really is no boundaries, you know, when I try and make my music. So I don't try and set myself to one sound or try and sound like anybody else. And that's why it's beautiful and such a blessing to work with people like Neverest. Those are my brothers, love them to death. We went in, we did Rewind, I did the chorus for them and created a great relationship. And then, yeah, someone like Jordan Sparks, you separate the whole sound and you write it for somebody like them, right? So it's cool.
When you actually write music for yourself or for other people, do you want to try to put out specific thoughts and messages, or is it mostly about, you know, having fun and being positive and enjoying yourself?
I mean, always, the majority of music I make is always positive. We always want to set a good tone out there, and we want kids to look up to us, right? We want people to listen to the music. We want people to appreciate it and be able to put themselves in that situation. So I would say everything I do write for myself, other artists, the majority of it is my real life situations. And whether that had to do with just growing up or dating or going somewhere or my basketball, it all merged into being able to write and express myself that way.
Can you tell us how you came about to write music for Jordan Sparks and Chris Brown? Because obviously we have a lot of people listening who enjoy their music.
Yeah. Well, Jordan Sparks, her mother, Miss Jody Sparks, great woman, she actually found me, came to me. And we started a relationship where I was just, you know, sending them music, and I was working with their production company, just sending them hook ideas for Jason Derulo they were working with at the time. And nothing got landed, but melodies and whatnot, they were thrown into songs. And Jordan Sparks' mom came to me with a song that they wanted to put together for McDonald's called Breakfast in the Morning. So I put that song completely together and sent it to them, and that's really how it started. Jordan sang it and sent it back, and I'm not sure what they're doing with the record right now, but that is how I got the relationship with them. And it was as simple as, I wouldn't say as simple, but I was lucky enough on the first try of sending a song to them that they really enjoyed who I was as a musician, and I was able to build that relationship.
Do you think you'll spend, you know, more time or split your time writing for other artists as well as yourself, or do you want to still concentrate, you know, let's say 80-20, like, you know, 80% you, 20% other people? Where are you splitting yourself?
That's a good question. Honestly, I love being the artist. If there's any musicians out there that will tell you that it's just, you know what, being the artist is amazing, but there's so much more behind being the artist. So for me, the fact that I do write and I'm able to write for others, I'll take it all day. I get half the money, mm-hmm. and it's a much easier route than being the artist, right? People have no idea how hard it is to actually be that artist. It's expensive. You know, labels don't always support you, so I'm just really thankful I have the ability to do both. So I would love to keep going as an artist. So as long as I just have, you know, followers and people who support me, I'll continue to be an artist and I'll continue to write songs for others.
Can you talk to us about your relationship with Neverest? Because that's actually how you and I found each other. I interviewed them a couple of weeks ago, and I had been tweeting it out and Facebooking it out, and they were sweet enough to sort of retweet and tweet themselves. So how did you meet those guys?
Those are my boys. Okay, so this is a good one. Before I even met these guys, I was a fan of Neverest.
Okay.
And I was just like, man, how can I reach out to these guys? Like, just let's just take a shot and be like, let me just message one of these guys on Facebook. I've seen that Paul, who was a good buddy of mine now, he had a private account on Facebook. So I went ahead and I messaged him, told him who I was, what I was trying to do. I was a singer-songwriter. I'm a friend of Drew's, blah, blah, blah. This is what we do. And he was nice enough, kind enough to message me back. He messaged me back less than a day later. He's a busy guy. And he actually he introduced me to Mike Kios, which is Big Park Productions. And he's the one who handles all Never's production and helps manage them as well. So Paul introduced me to him. hit me back saying they were actually looking for writers and whatnot, and I got introduced to Mike, and they brought me into the studio. As I walked into the studio, these guys had this record playing, so they just wanted to see what I could do with this. So I was like, let me hear it. And they're like, no, you can't hear it. We want to hear what you do with it first, Mr. Miles. So I was like, okay, cool. So they played the song. This was in like 10 minutes of me being there, meeting these guys, my first time in the studio with them. So,
wow.
But instantly, the vibe, the whole feeling of being around them, it was nothing nerve-wracking. It was very comfortable. So I felt like this is easy. These guys are cool. You know, the sound that these guys, that I heard coming from these guys was right down my lane. Mm-hmm. So when I heard the hook come in, I started with this. This whole melody came into my head. I killed it out, and they told me to just get in the booth. They were like, get in there, record it. That's the hook. We did it. A couple of days later, Spee, another brother of mine, lead singer, vocalist at Neverest, he went in and destroyed it. So I was beyond ecstatic, happy that Neverest actually sang my words. So they ended up keeping the chorus together, and that was my creation of the song. But other than that, we've done other songs together that we've worked on, and nothing that's released, but we've gone in there and written songs, and I featured on a couple songs, rapping and whatnot. So we've definitely put a lot of work together and in so far, right? So who knows what the future holds in store, between me featuring them or them featuring me one day. So we'll see.
Are there other Canadian artists, whether it's a band or, a solo artist that you'd like to work with? Or even if we go international, who would you love to work with?
Man, who would I love to work with? Canadian-wise, I love all of our rock bands. I would love to work with Down With Webster. Mm-hmm. They're buddies of mine as well, but we haven't really gotten in and got busy yet, but they're definitely doing their thing. Drew, of course, good buddy of mine, the person who really got me out there, will always be making records. I would love to work with Jay-Z one day. I would love to work with Jay-Z, Justin Timberlake, Frank Ocean. I would love to get in the studio with Pharrell. I would love to get in the studio with Kendrick Lamar. I would love to get into the studio with Alicia Keys. And so people like that, Maxwell.
Right, Maxwell, that's great. That is a throwback. I love him. I want to talk to you about your song Roller Coaster. What's the vibe of the song, and what do you want your fans and new listeners to pull from it?
Man, we need everybody to support this record. Now, Roller Coaster, the creation behind that was just insane as well. And that had to do with me walking into the studio again with Mike Kios, and Levi from Big Park Productions. And they were just like, dude, what can you do with this beat? And he was only 8 bars in, I believe, with the beat. And I just started this melody. Girl, I'm on a roller coaster. Can you bring me down? And they're like, get in there. But we did that again, and we just built around that. And then we were like, it was such a big record at the time, and still is in our minds, that we just had to finish the record. And then it became a business thing right away. Who could we shop this to? Who's going to be the artist? Who could fund it? Blah, 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 blah. We went through it all. We actually had, Drew was going to take it as his record at one point, and then he has his singles coming out. But we just felt, Mike felt, myself, Drew, that it was time for me to come out as an artist, mm-hmm. and this was the song for it. It's very CHR friendly, band supporters, new listeners can hear it, bear it, love it. The production behind it is insane. Insane. Blows everybody's speakers out. So it's definitely one that we need everybody to look out for. We did shoot a video. Special thank you to Much Music for that. They gave me the grant for that one. We shot the video with Daniel Rosenberg. So there's a lot of work, a lot of time, blood, sweat, and tears put into this record. I can't stress how hard I've worked on this record, behind the scenes, behind what everybody will ever know. So all I ask for is your support from myself, Drew, Big Park Productions. We need you. Go to CoreyNiles.com. It's all there. And get it off iTunes. Why wouldn't you, right? Obviously. So
exactly.
Let's do it.
Speaking of the places that you just mentioned, your website and iTunes and all that, how would you say social media has played a part in your career, and is it helping you get the word out?
Yes. Social media has definitely helped me massively. I would be lying if I told you it wasn't. as simple as your Instagrams, your Twitters, your Facebooks. You have listeners and fans and supporters everywhere. So as simple as your post and people listening to you from the first song you put out or the first thing you did, right? There's always people who will be there to support you if they're going to support you. So social media has given me that outlet to bring people into my life, kind of, without being there. So things I do, things I say, crazy things I say, I blab it out on Twitter. I'm one to follow on there because I get real wild with that one. And then, you know, Instagram, you're posting pictures of your life. So it helps to show who you are as an artist, your image, your branding. This is who I am. This is how I live. You like it, you like it, you follow. You don't, hopefully you still talk about it and it's controversy. That's how I see it. So social media is an excellent outlet for every artist and helps my career.
And what is up next for you? You know, we're talking about Roller Coaster, but what do you see in the next 6 months? Because I would even ask, you know, the next year, but things go by so fast nowadays. Like, what do you have planned for the next 6 months?
Man, in the next 6 months, honestly, right now, I've been working on this mixtape that I've promised a lot of people for a while now. And I'm so happy I haven't released anything yet because I have over probably 200 songs recorded. Now, with this mixtape, I've called it Walking Paradox. I'm not sure if I'm going to call it that yet, but there's a lot behind why I'm calling it that as well. I just feel like I'm a walking paradox in itself. Mm-hmm. That's a paradox. So, right? But there's so much work done in the next 6 months. I hope and I truly do see, you know, Roller Coaster doing so good and at least enough here in Canada that, you know, these people allow me to release a second single, right? I want everybody to appreciate Roller Coaster and at least want to hear what's coming out next. And we definitely do have things lined up. Like I said, who knows? It could be possibly Neverest. It could be Drew. It could be Down with Webster. It could be Headley. It could be Chris Brown. It could be Jordan Sparks. It could be Jason Derulo. Nobody knows anything, right? So, like I said, it goes back to the whole supporting this first record to be able to really keep showing who I am as an artist and writer, right? But there will be a second single coming out, world. There will be a second single coming out. Even bigger than Roller Coaster. It gets bigger and better and more epic every single time.
Corey, it's been so awesome to speak to you. I really appreciate your time, especially, you know, we love your enthusiasm and the way you're so passionate about what you do. So thank you so much for hanging out with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Kelly. It's been a pleasure and an honor, and I could be on this thing anytime you ask me.
I appreciate that. That is recording artist Corey Niles. Again, make sure you check him out on his website. You can grab all his social media from there, CoreyNiles.com.
Girls in my way, I bagged one and we dip. Two chains on my hip, yo girl all in my lap. And she talking all of that, talking all of that, talking all of that smack. And she talking all of that, talking all of that, talking all of that smack. Go.
Girl, I'm on a roller coaster, can you bring me down? I've been trying to find some ways to put your body to the ground. Put your body to the ground. Put your body to the ground. I've been trying to find some ways, girl, I've been trying to figure out. Got this bad girl and she calling me, she calling me. Oh, my. Got this bad girl, she all over me, she all over me. She got me on this rollercoaster ride. She got me on this rollercoaster ride.
Okay, I'm stupid, la vida in this loco menage. Got that body so wicked, she begging for life. Got two bad girls, that makes three. The other two maddies, two here, P-I-M-P-O-Y. Go.
She got me high for days and I can't keep my damn head out the clouds. I'm so strung out on her, you think I've been smoking by the pound. I've been smoking by the pound. I've been smoking by the pound. I'm so strung out on her and I'm still here trying to figure out. She calling me, she calling me. Oh, my. Got this bad girl, she all over me, she all over me. She got me on this rollercoaster ride. She got me on this rollercoaster ride. I'm losing control, it's like she's taking over my mind. Heart's beating so fast, it's beating out of time. Never been so caught up before in my
she calling me? Is she calling me? Oh, my. Got this bad girl, she all over me. She all over me. She got me.
Remix.
Going out to my guests this week, Pam Oakes, Patrick Charles, as well as Corey Niles. Here is your inspirational quote of the week, this time coming from K.A. Lady. We have one precious life. Do something extraordinary today, even if it's tiny. A pebble starts the avalanche. Thank you, as always, for hanging out on the show. Don't forget to check our YouTube channel, Kelly Alexander Show. Also on Twitter, at K Alexander Show. And of course, Facebook, Kelly Alexander Show. You can also drop me a line if you have any questions, Kelly at KellyAlexanderShow.com. Have a great week. You and I will chat soon.